This is, we're going to have to cover a lot of material this evening, so pardon me when I start going quickly. And if I go slowly, we'll be here a long time. It's, subtitle is Giving Up Krodha, Taking Up Krishna. It's not too dissimilar from the going for Sakam to Nishkam Bhakti. That is the hallmark of the Dhruva Leela. The anger has to do with his stepbrother Uttama was killed by yakshas, a yaksha or some yakshas, and he became really angry, and with all of his power, he went and had battle with the yakshas. And then they did their mystic thing, and he got bewildered, and the sages, just with sound vibration, brought him back to his normal consciousness. They reminded him of his Narayana Astra. He fitted, as soon as he put that arrow to his bow, poof, all the mystic powers of the yakshas disappeared. And all kinds of other arrows came from that arrow, and he was killing them left and right. There were 130,000 soldiers against Dhruva. That was really good. He was getting carried away. So Swayambhuva Manu, his grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu came and presented reasons why Dhruva should stop killing the yakshas. So there's different categories, and it goes in phases. He gave some very practical reasons, like ethical reasons, I guess. There's the first one. Excessive anger, ati roshena, is sinful. Pap mana. Excessive anger is sinful. So there's the word. Ati roshena and papamana, and then tamo dvarena, that's the dwara to hell, gate to hell, path to hellish life. Lord Manu said, my dear son, please stop. It's not good to become unnecessarily angry. It is the path to hellish life. Now you're going beyond the limit of killing yakshas, were actually, by killing yakshas, were actually not offenders. So, danger signal. Then, Prabhupada's comment, modern warfare, ati roshena means with unnecessary anger. When Dhruva Maharaj went beyond the limits of necessary anger, so anger may be necessary for a kshatriya. His grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu, immediately came to protect him from further sinful action. Anger is an emotion or a feeling, and feelings start with thinking and then feeling, and then comes what? Willing. Thinking, feeling, willing. And then behavior. In a situation which triggers anger in a mood of detachment and aided by buddhi, immediately consider, what was that thought which propelled me to feel angry? This is, you know, detachment and reflective mood, thinking about something that made you angry. Maybe you never got angry before. You're not human. Is that thought me-centered, or is it in harmony with Dharma? Because in harmony with Dharma puts Krishna at the center, because Krishna is the source of Dharma. When anger is triggered, when that intense emotion is triggered, it's hard to check it, because anger is very powerful. But it can be checked. And that's putting Krishna at the center. Before giving up this present body, Bhagavad Gita, if one is able to tolerate the urges of material senses and check the forces of desire and anger, he is situated, he is well situated, and is happy in this world. Now, yeah. Not normally what the standard of happiness in this world is like, but this is the Bhagavad Gita standard of happiness. So that anger energy has to go somewhere instead of into the anger target. It has to go somewhere. It has to go to higher consciousness. Or what came earlier when he was feeling angry, his mother said, paraphrased, take shelter of higher principles. So that's where that energy needs to go. Higher principle-centered or dharmic-centered life. And then Krishna conscious for Krishna's pleasure. So that was Atiroshena. Next, this is not befitting to our dynasty. Nasmat kulochitam. Kula, family. Kulochitam. Not, it's not fitting to our dynasty. So this is now going to show the 12 Mahajans, one of which is Swayambhuva Manu and his good wife Shatrurupa. Shown in between the two of them, that's Lord Brahma, because they're directly coming from the body of Lord Brahma, and behind him is Garbhadaksha Vishnu. So he is a very eminent personality, and protecting his dynasty is of his interest, but it's also of Dhruva's interest, because he's of the dynasty. Now, in our modern society, family structure is such that people don't give a hoot about that. I mean, largely. The culture of being a proper representative of the family tree or the dynasty in which one is born, it's not a very big deal. But in cultured society, it's a big deal. It helps keep people in line, because the ancestry being exalted helps one be situated in exaltedness. Okay. And that which is contradictory or not befitting of the dynasty is contemned by the virtuous. Sad vigarhitam. Here's text 8. My dear son, the killing of the sinless yakshas, which you have taken, is not at all approved by authorities, and does not befit our family, which is supposed to know the laws of religion and irreligion. No purport. Killing many for one person's fault out of affection for your brother Uttama. Bodily identification, just like animals do, is not the path of the sadhus. Here's the translation. My dear son, it has been proved that you are very much affectionate towards your brother and are greatly aggrieved at his being killed by the yakshas. But just consider, for one yaksha's offense, you have killed many, many others who are innocent. One should not accept the body as the self, and thus, like animals, kill the bodies of others. This is especially forbidden by saintly persons who follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesha. Sadhunam. This is unbefitting of a sadhu. He's invoking his higher nature to help check the lower nature. Sadhunam. So who's a sadhu? And what makes them saintly? So it's indicating here they're Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, or Rishikesha Anuvartinam. At least sadhu means to follow the path. Anuvartina. So it's the less than mature stage, but somebody is someone who is saintly, a sadhu, who is a devotee. And that a devotee is one who is following the path. Anushilana. Exactly the word. Shila means behavior. So one is following the behavior of great souls. And that means pleasing the personality of God. So it's not just, you know, a chat. This is one of the 12 Mahajans having a conversation, instruction to Dhruva. Prabhupada quotes the verse in the purport, Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate, taken from Narada Pancharatra. Right from the purport. Looks like he's missing one of his feet. Right foot. Kind of got cut off. He give his foot back. Dhruva Maharaj is being reminded by Swami Bhavamanu that he is a blessed servitor of Vishnu. So Swami Bhavamanu certainly knew what transpired between Vishnu and Dhruva, and so he's reminding him of that special position that he has, and he should, good fortune that came to him, and so he should act accordingly. So there's the text from the verse, Aradhyapa Duraradhyam Vishnustad Paramam Padam. You're already destined to go to Vaikuntha. Hey, Dhruva, control yourself. You have worshipped the Lord as Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena, which means with thoughts that he is in all beings. Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena. And you're killing some of those beings. That's not good. So this unnecessary killing is not befitting you. Here's text 11. It is very difficult to achieve the spiritual abode of Hari in the Vaikuntha planets, but you are so fortunate that you are already destined to go to that abode by worshiping him as the supreme abode of all living beings. Interesting. This is very elevated talk, but anger is hard to check. So it doesn't happen right away. Because you are a pure devotee of the Lord is always thinking of you, and you are recognized by all his confidential devotees, like Narada over there. Your life is meant for exemplary behavior, and I am therefore surprised. Why have you undertaken such an abominable task? Glad he was able to find him in the middle of what he was doing. Here's a painting, an image of Krishna. Notice the peacock feather over there. In meditation. And you probably have heard this before. It's one of the 1,000 names of Vishnu is Vasumana. Vasumana. So the commentary goes like this. Baladev Vidyabhusan wrote a commentary in the 1,000 names. And the Vasumana message is from Mahabharata. When one morning Yudhisthira went to pay his respects to Krishna and he saw he was in meditation, something like this, so he didn't disturb him, and waited and waited, and when he completed his meditation he paid his respects and then asked him, what are you meditating on? You're the personality of Godhead. And he said, Vasumana, I was just meditating on Grandfather Bhishma. Because Grandfather Bhishma was always thinking of me, and therefore I'm always thinking of Grandfather Bhishma. And then comes, it's not in his commentary, but there's this word mamata, which is particularly brought up again and again in relation to the residents in Vrindavan, they have exclusive mamata. Mama is mine. Aham and mama. And they, those who feel the Lord is mine, that's mamata. And for the Vrijbasis is exclusive. But for others, it's also like Grandfather Bhishma, for example, and Dhruva, for example, that they consider the personality of Godhead all in all for them. Except Dhruva kind of slipped up a little bit because of his over-attachment for his stepbrother. From Bhagavad Gita, the purport quotes, "For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me." That's the mamata phrase. Our acharyas, it has a rasika sense to it. It applies to the sadhakas, or those who are matured in their bhakti. But it has a rasa sense. At least that's how they use it. Then, so he's now invoking his Krishna attachment. Stop killing for Krishna's pleasure. Titikshaya krunaya maitriya chakila jantushu. The Lord is very satisfied with his devotee when the devotee greets other people with tolerance, mercy, friendship, and equality. Now this, seeing others equally, it's over and over in many places. It's a quality of one who is, in the spiritual conception. And when those that have the spiritual conception and they relate to others with spiritual conception, namely, titikshaya, karunaya, maitriya, Akila Jantushu. Krishna is very pleased. Samatvena cha sarvatma bhagavan samprasidati. Please, Krishna, stop this other. The Supreme Lord, the soul of all beings, is pleased when a Madhyama devotee is titikshaya, tolerant of superiors, and when ill-treated by envious. I was having a discussion with one devotee, not in this country, and there was a kind of an outburst of harsh speech towards a superior. And they felt, you know, bad. And on one hand, they felt bad. They also felt justified what that superior did. Now, I'm in a process of helping them put a cold towel over their forehead and understand What's the instruction for a cultured person to communicate to a superior? There you need to do a course correction. And there's different ways that's expressed. I'm spending some time to find those suitable expressions, Prabhupada's writings and other teachings. But tolerant of superiors. I mean, a really big one, obviously, is Ram's response to Dasarath saying, go to the forest, although it wasn't what he wanted. And others were saying, you know, Lakshmana says, I'll kill him. Bharata, you know. Anyway, superiors. And it's culture, but it's also culture that's living by Dharma is pleasing to the Supreme Lord. It doesn't mean, you know, get stepped on or be people's punching bag or something. When a king has a subject, but to speak of a brother that's killed, It's his duty to take strong action. But the strong action has to be done in a proper way. So, tolerant of superiors and when ill-treated by envious, you still do something. Karunaya, merciful to inferiors. Maitri, friendly towards equals. Samatvena, take others' happiness and distress as his own, equal to everyone. Notice, this is the Madhyama. Superiors, inferiors, equals, and ultimately, see on the spiritual platform, the happiness samatvena. Nice. This is Vishwanath's commentary on this verse. Breaking it down. It's Madhyama discussion. Instruction. From Bhagavad Gita. I consider that practicing yogi who sees equally everything as equal to himself in all circumstances, samatvena, whether in happiness or suffering, to be the topmost yogi. So what to speak of devotee, huh? It's just a yogi. Now, what about us? Do we want to be free from the effects of the modes of material nature? Do we want to become free from the tendencies of gross and subtle bodies? Do we want to experience a real mood of service? You know, we can check those boxes pretty easily, and then what do we do to get that? So these instructions, it's like Bhagavad Gita is the manual, and then the Bhagavatam is bringing it to life through historical events. And this is Swayambhuvamanu instructing Dhruva. Can be, you know, Swayambhuvamanu instructing us, or the Bhagavatam instructing us. What happens? How to get over anger that gets triggered? So here's the next verse. One who actually satisfies the Supreme Personality of Godhead during one's lifetime becomes liberated from the gross and subtle material conditions. I mean, the conditions are there, but liberated from them means it doesn't control your consciousness. Jiva nirmukto. Jiva nirmukto. And thus, being freed from all material modes of nature, he achieves unlimited spiritual bliss. Brahma nirvanam. We're going to hear some more about that phrase, Brahma nirvanam. Ritshati. Gunaiva mukto. Wouldn't that be nice? No more material modes of nature acting. Prabhupada's purport. Karmis try to satisfy themselves by sense gratification, and Gyanis try to satisfy themselves by subtle activities or mental speculation and thinking themselves to be God. Yogis also try to satisfy themselves by thinking that they can achieve different mystic perfections. But only devotees try to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is this, you know, it's all about me versus all about Krishna. That's the big difference. The devotee's process of self-realization is completely different from the processes of karmis, gyanis, and yogis. Everyone else is trying to satisfy himself, whereas the devotee tries only to satisfy the Lord. Now, obviously, a theme in the whole of the Bhagavatam, certainly in this narration, and anyone you can think of, the theme is bhakti. Where bhakti is being nourished by these narrations. So we really want people to read Prabhupada's books, because when bhakti is nourished, then many of the problems that they're struggling with can be handled or dissipated. And the opposite is true. By working to please the Lord, by engaging his senses in the Lord's loving service, The devotee is immediately situated in the transcendental platform and he enjoys blissful life. Well, immediately means gradually. Quickly. So Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya activities in these images and overriding all is chanting of the holy name. I remember one time we went to visit, to do book distribution from Boston. We went to Martha's Vineyard. We thought, hey, you know, Motive Goodness people, they'll be, you know, they'll be good. So to get to Martha's Vineyard, you have to go on boats go on a ferry. They drive the boat onto the ferry and the ferry goes and they unload the boats. They unload the cars. So as we're driving from the ferry going towards where we were going, we saw a police officer with a bead bag on his hand. And I was like, what? he was conducting traffic with his left hand and holding his bead bag, you know, standing in the middle of the traffic with his right hand. And so during the course of that stay, we met him. He's a devotee who's a traffic cop and, you know, this a few years ago in Martha's Vineyard. So one can be a Kshatriya and chant Hare Krishna too. These days it's not uncommon that, devotee, Hare Krishna devotee youth join the army. I know a number of young people, that's what they've done. So they can go to college and all that. Jivan Mukta. This is from, Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, 7th canto, chapter 7. Jivan Mukto means freed from the subtle body, which is beyond Brahma Nirvana, as described by Prahlad. So here's the description from Prahlad. The wise know that direct contact with the Lord, which includes the happiness of Brahman, destroys samsara for the sinful persons possessing material bodies in this world. Therefore, worship the Paramatma in your heart. This is instructions to his classmates. So to his classmates, go beyond Brahma Nirvana to the position of Jivan Mukta. Prakritir Ganai Vimukta, that's from our verse, means that not only is he free from the gunas of Prakriti, but is, quote, specially liberated, meaning beyond merging in Brahman. Now, from time to time, the commentary makes that distinction. One of the first ones that struck me is, you know, in reading the Bhagavatam, is that verse from Canto 1, Chapter 2, where it says that the activities of devotion are meant for special liberation. I'm trying to remember the sloka. Karma. Yeah, that's another one. Karma Shinindya Priti. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartotayopakalpate. That verse. So the way the Prabhupada translates it, Dharmasya, the apavarga is beyond liberation. Same as what's here. Beyond the merging of Brahman idea of liberation, specially liberated, apavarga. Dharma is meant for that devotional service, pure devotional service. When Manu saw that Maharaj Dhruva was still dissatisfied because of his brother's death, so now there's a next section, it's quite a few verses, it's 11 verses, The Supreme Lord is the ultimate cause, such as, what is the nature of all things we perceive? Who is the killer and who is killed? So it's, I mean, I thought the other arguments were pretty compelling, but now he's going to get into some philosophy. And that seems to work for Dhruva. There's creation. Women and men arise from bodies made of the five elements. From their interaction, more women and men appear. Oh. Dhruva Maharaj was indirectly advised not to be afflicted by his brother's death because bodily relationships are material. That's interesting graphics to say what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. Bodily relationships are material. So he's now going to get into the Supreme Lord's position in relation to creation, maintenance, and destruction. Oh, King, as the creation of bodies takes place in this way, so does the maintenance and destruction of bodies take place by the action of the gunas through the maya of the Supreme Lord. Now, that's Vishwanath's paraphrasing of what the verse is saying. We're not reading the verse. That's his gloss. Things come into being, bodies come into being, all kinds of things come into being through the action of gunas, and it's all the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. Here's the BBT translation. My dear King Dhruva, it is simply by the illusory material energy of the Supreme Personality Godhead and by interaction of the three modes of material nature that creation, maintenance, and annihilation take place. So behind all this is the Supreme Lord. Where he's going with this is, if you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at the Supreme Lord. Take it easy on the yakshas. So there's the, you know, images of mother and father with their little ones in different species of life. Creation, maintenance, destruction, it's all from the modes of nature. Maintenance is also a tendency within the modes of nature. Those who are transcendental, even to the material modes of nature, are situated in the mode of pure goodness. They attain eternal life in the spiritual world. Hey, Dhruva, that's where you're headed, remember? How can creation, Vishwanath, how can creation, maintenance, and destruction of bodies take place without some foundation of consciousness? And where's consciousness connected to, Dhruva? Nirmita matram. You're familiar with that phrase from Bhagavad Gita. And this has to do with Krishna being the cause, just like the magnet and the nails clinging to the magnet. My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. He is the remote cause of creation of the cosmic manifestation. When he gives the impetus, many other causes and effects are produced, and thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of a magnet. Now this is philosophy. He's the remote cause, or nimitta cause, and then there's the upadan cause. So you're thinking the yakshas, they're the cause, but they're not the cause. It's the, take a look at that magnet, Dhruva. Take a look at the remote cause. Parasha Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate. Naturally, Prabhupada likes this one. Svetashvatara Upanishad. His potencies are multifarious, and thus, his deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. Swabhaviki jnana balakriyacha, swabhaviki is a natural sequence. So, I'm surprised this didn't come first, and after he didn't like connect to the philosophy, he did the bhakti message. The bhakti message came first, now he's dealing with. Because the philosophy, the purpose of a philosophy is what? Not just to become, to have information. There's information. But what's the purpose of information from all these things? There's a remote cause, and the intelligent person who understands that connect with remote cause, not just the immediate cause. The whole of the universe. It's an essential part of teaching today's Monday. On Sunday, in the midday, that we spent some time with Govinda Mohini and a friend of hers who's from Czechoslovakia, who grew up not having a tradition, a particular tradition, but having spiritual inclinations. So she's going to have a blast because she's not prescripted. And it's a nice adventure, but in part of that adventure, it's essential to get a foundation in what's what, sambandh again. And it's maybe a little dry. It's not Duraskula, but it's foundational to understand. It's there in the Vedas, it's there in the Bhagavatam, here it is in the Bhagavatam, right here in the midst of a battlefield with Dhruva and the Yakshas, giving him sambandh again, and to understand, here's how the universe works, and you need to conduct yourself in accord with the remote cause. Don't see the instrumental cause. I mean, it takes somebody who is refined to be able to make that, to have that control their emotions. But for Dhruva, it worked. And it's for persons who want to become elevated, like this really nice lady. She wants to, for her, she's like super mom. She really wants for her kids. And she has to be from her because she can't then pass it on to her kids without her having it. So these core understandings of how we fit in with the universe, and how does the universe fit in with its cause, and how do we relate to both? It's important. Everything is happening by the energy of the Supreme Lord. But atheistic philosophers say that everything is just the interaction of material elements. So there's a little, put vinegar and water together, and what happens? You get sodium something or other. Phosphate? I can't read it. Is that what it says? Acetate. Okay. So that's a chemical problem, because he was a chemist. You this plus this, you get that. So, but the cosmic manifestation is more than just interaction of material elements. Mechanistic science would say it's just an interaction of elements. And the laws governing how elements interact, and that's it. There's nothing else. Mechanistic science. But one cannot produce life by such interaction of chemicals. There are 8,400,000 different species of life with different wishes and different actions. Here's this classic potter and potter's wheel, upadan maya and nimitta maya, upadan karana and nimitta karana. It's a classic from philosophy. The potter's wheel rotates, and several varieties of earthen pots come out. Varieties. There are many causes for the earthen pots, but the original cause is the potter who sets a force on the wheel. That force comes by his superintendence. looks like with a little help from somebody else too. It's a classic example of to show how, what's involved in creation. There are different causations. And that which undergoes change completely, that's the clay. And the thing that doesn't change is the potter, the thing that doesn't change is the wheel, the thing that doesn't change is if there's some instruments. But even the wheel and, so there's categories of nimittas. And so there's instruments amongst the nimittas that don't change. And then there's the remote cause. Anyway, that's the potter example. And that's, that example is used to explain the universe or creation or, you know, what's it all about? It's all about, there are different forces interacting to make it coming about. And we have to factor them all in or we won't have a proper understanding. So now we're going to read a few verses. If Vishnu is aloof, how is everything being done? And now we're going to bring in the time factor. Very important topic. Very fascinating topic. That's, difficult to understand, but fascinating. Here's text 18. The Supreme Personality of Godhead by His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. It's time. He's the culprit. Thus, It is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. And one of those inconceivable powers is the time energy. Time moves stuff. It's like this house. There was a time it was something else. It was probably an agricultural field, at least at some point in time. And time moved and here we are. And time's going to move and something else is going to be here. Text 19. As time, He is indestructible, beginningless, and inexhaustible. Yet He causes the beginning and end of all that is temporary, exhaustible, and limited. Whew. Time energy is really far out. It was the last subject that Sariputta was involved in. He was giving seminars and writing books. He was really into it. And I haven't gotten around to immersing myself. I'm sure it's very brilliant. I'm sure. My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existing, but in the form of time, He is the killer of everything. He has no beginning, although He is the beginning of everything, nor is He ever exhaustible, although everything is exhausted in due course of time. The living entities are created, that means the bodies, are created through the agency of the Father and killed through the agency of death. But He, the Supreme Lord, is perpetually free of birth and death. I mean, creation begins with living entities plus time energy going into pradhan, because it's not going to happen without time energy. And then it's happening, and things come into, it's continued to come into being and go out of being by time. They bring things into being and wears them down and takes them away. Time moves matter. We don't see time moving matter. I don't see time moving matter. You don't see time. But it's invisible, and it's acting, and we're all getting older, and sometime kaput. as time, Vishnu is neutral towards all beings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his feature of eternal time, is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one is his ally and no one is his enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time element, everyone enjoys or suffers the result of his own karma or fruitive activities. As when the wind blows, small particles of dust fly in the air. So, according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life. That's a really good example. The wind isn't partial, saying, okay, that particle of dust I'm going to send flying in the air, and those particles I'm just going to leave them sitting there. The wind is not partial, and beings move by the force of time. Vishnu metes out equal karmic justice. I mean, we're on a battlefield, and he's being pacified by Swayambhuvamanu, and here's this, you know, Sankhya Yoga, Sankhya philosophy class. Interesting. Like dust is impartially moved by wind. So this idea is discussed in many other places. I'll read the verse, the next verse, but here's Bhagavad Gita. You know this. Purusha Prakriti Sohi Bhunkte Prakriti Janganan Karanam Gunasangosya Sadasadhyana Janma Jonashu. We're creating, and the Supreme Lord is arranging, we're creating our own good fortune, ill fortune, Sadasadhyoni Janmasu. And it happens as a result of Purusha Prakriti Bhunkte, trying to be enjoyers of Prakriti this way, that way. And we're creating our destiny. When destiny comes, it's not partial. Or another nice example from Brahma Samhita is pointed out. Karmani nirdahitu kinti chabhakti bhajam. This is for the devotee. The karma of the devotee is taken away by fruitive tendency being taken away. The very root of material activity. But that's that same verse that says, you know, from Indra down to the Indra Gopajaram, their karma is being equally, appropriately distributed. So, here's text 22. I didn't read it yet. The time energy is at work. The differentiation among varieties of life and their suffering and enjoyment is explained by some to be the result of karma. Others say it is due to nature. Others due to time. Others due to fate. And still others say that it is due to desire. By the way, that those are different philosophies, classic philosophies, and we're going to see a philosophy chart in a second. Oh, there's the verse I just read. Well, here's 23. The absolute truth, transcendence, is never subject to the understanding of imperfect sensory endeavor, nor is he subject to direct experience. He is the master of varieties of energies, like the full material energy. And no one can understand his plans or actions. Therefore, it should be concluded that although he is the original cause of all causes, no one can know him by mental speculation. This same idea was in Brahma's Prayers, chapter 14 of Canto 10. Where, you know, different people have different ideas. And aside from all those different ideas, whatever they are, those different ideas have one source. That's you. Philosophers get philosophies from the source of everything. And as far as I'm concerned, all I need to know is you're the source of everything. So there are atheistic philosophies. Here's the chart. On the left side is the Charvaka, the names of what those different philosophies, Mimamsaka, karma is the cause. Karma Mimamsaka. The Charvaka, the nature of matter or Swabhava is the cause. Just follow your nature. Eat, drink, and be merry. And they've got a name, Lokayatas. Vyavaharikas, followers of the Puranas. They say time is the cause. Astrologers say the stars are the cause, or Daivam, or fate. Everything is meant to be. Vatsyayana, study of Shrutis. I run into something in China that seems to be, I don't know if it's part of their culture, but you know, it's not terribly common, but not uncommon either. Persons think somewhere out there, it's kind of like the soulmate idea. Somewhere out there is my guru. I just have to find him. It's like already determined. And how do I find who my guru is? Because it's already determined and I don't know what the rules are. And they have a strong idea of fate. And, the atheistic ideas have, they're very interesting. And some of them are supported, they say, by what the Vedas say. It's just an atheistic interpretation of the Vedas. Manu gives the opinions of different philosophers about the cause of dualities. Why this instead of that? Why that instead of this? However, he's pointing to Vishnu. Oh, son, these followers of Kuvera are not the killers of your brother. The cause of birth and death of living beings is the Lord. I told you, if you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at him. But you're his devotee, so you can't get mad at him. So stop it. But no philosophers can understand the Lord's plan. Okay, so now I'm supposed to read more. 23 through 26. That's a nice painting, isn't it? The absolute truth, transcendence, is never subject to the understanding of imperfect sensory endeavor, nor is he subject to direct experience. He is the master of varieties of energies like the full material energy, and no one can understand his plans or actions. Therefore, it should be concluded that although he is the original cause of all causes, no one can know him by mental speculation. Big theme in various prayers or sections of the Bhagavatam. Big theme. Jnana prayasa udapasya. Like, toss that one away. My dear son, those yakshas who are descendants of Kuvera are not actually killers of your brother. Semicolon. The birth and death of every living entity are caused by the Supreme, who is certainly the cause of all causes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material world, maintains it, and annihilates it in due course of time. But because he is transcendental to such activities, he is never affected by ego in such action or by the modes of material nature. The Supreme Personality Godhead is the Supersoul of all living entities. He is the controller and maintainer of everyone. Through the agency of his external energy, he creates, maintains, and annihilates everyone. But, you know, again, it's like he does that through time. I find it fascinating. You can say it this way, you can say it that way. But the time energy is inescapable for material affairs. I mean, things don't happen without time. And it's time energy. It's not just, and time energy works according to the indication of the Supreme Lord to move the modes of material nature. Just like when you're really absorbed in something, it seems like timeless. You don't even notice time is passing. And if you're like waiting at a bus stop or waiting for, you know, something, time goes really slowly. Like, so, time energy. It's a fascinating topic. And he has said, you're a meditator on the super soul. That's your thing, Dhruva. He's the one. It's his time energy that makes these things happen. So fix your attention on him again, please. Oh, King. This is now Canto 1, Chapter 9. Bhishma Dev speaking. Oh, King, to Yudhisthira. No one can know the plan of the Lord, even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively. They're bewildered. Same message, right? These philosophers are all ignorant of the root cause of everything. Pretty good graphic. The root cause of the tree is what's down below the earth. The Lord creates the universe, maintains it, and destroys it. Without attachment or ego, he is not affected by actions of the gunas. He does everything through his external energy. These are commentaries on the verse that we just read. The Lord is not to be blamed. Although he's the cause, he's not to be blamed. Huh? He's the cause, why is he not to be blamed? Let's read. We read it already. Dhruva, though I have been enlightened by you, I cannot give up my ego. He's hard nut. Okay, so he's going to be finished though. Surrender to Krishna. Give up anger and take up Krishna bhakti. Mrityum Amritam. Text 27. My dear Dhruva, please surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate goal of the progress of the world. Everyone, including the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, is working under his control, just as a bull. You probably wondered, why is that image there? Just as a bull, prompted by a rope in its nose, is controlled by its owner. Everyone, including the demigods, working under his control. They're controlled by the modes, and the modes are under the direction of time, and it's moving things forward, or left or right, or whatever direction things take. We're all controlled. Dhruva, you're controlled. Surrender to the Supreme Controller. Mrityum and Amritam. Don't go that to the path of being controlled by the force of death. Be controlled by the force of eternal existence. The Lord is death for the demons, but for devotee is Amrita, eternal life. Remember, Dhruva, who you are and what you have received. Giving up your mother when you were 5 years old, wounded by the words of your stepmother, you went to the forest. Worshipping the Lord by austerities, you achieved the topmost position in the three worlds. So you're already a surrendered soul. Surrendered to the snowstorm outside. That's it? Yeah. Hare Krishna. My dear Dhruva, please therefore turn your attention to the Supreme Person who is the infallible Brahman. Face the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your original position and thus by self-realization, you will find this material differentiation to be merely flickering. So he strikes a chord with Dhruva. Friend and enemy differentiation is not any more present in a person who is self-realized, commentary says, Samadarshana. He had to get a little reminder, that's all. Give up your bad thoughts. Give up your thoughts of material bad and good, friend, enemy, and all of that. It's a theme throughout the Bhagavatam. That's the material absorption, friend, enemy position. Thus, regaining your natural position and rendering service unto the Supreme Lord, who is the all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure, and who lives in all living entities as the Supersoul, you will very soon forget the illusory understanding of I and mine. Now, earlier we saw this graphic, it's all about me, and it's meant to be replaced by it's all about Krishna. So that material conception is dismissed. You can't tell very well all the things that are floating off it to the right. It's me, 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 me. It's all about me. And false ego holds us to that place. And to cut false ego is not so easy. The spiritual conception is not so easy. Manu says to Maharaj Dhruva, do you not remember how you attained the Lord when you were 5 years old? Regaining your original position and rendering service to the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, who is all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure and who lives in all living entities as the Supersoul. You will very soon forget the illusory understanding of I and mine. So he's reminding him of his past. Dhruva was already liberated because at the age of 5 he saw the Lord. But he was temporarily afflicted by the illusory bodily conception of life due to his brother's death. Now Manu reminded him that he should not continue in this material conception of I and mine. We're almost done. I told you there's a lot. So I had to go quickly. The verse shows that Bhagavan is bliss itself, Ananda Matre, endowed with all Shaktis, Upana Samasta Shaktau. It is clear from this that Bhagavan is an indivisible entity appearing with full manifestation with these Shaktis, whereas Brahman is an incomplete manifestation without appearance of those Shaktis. So, which is more attractive, Brahman or Krishna? You got it. So take shelter of Krishna or Vishnu. He's a Vishnu Bhakta. Here's a summary verse. Give up anger by my instructions, because of anger is the foremost enemy of self-realization. It's detrimental for those who desire liberation, and it makes one a source of dread for all others. Okay, 31:32. There we go. My dear King, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as a medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy in the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instructions. A person who desires liberation from the material world should not fall under the control of anger, because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others. So this is, if you have the occasion to be dealing with somebody or interacting with somebody who's like in a fit of anger, I know somebody, so I'm going to recommend that they read this section, because it's the Bhagavatam's teaching about going beyond anger. There's many things that one can do in the Bhagavatam's great medicine. Let go of anger. So holding on to something sometimes does more damage than letting go. That's let go of anger. Okay. Because you have, in anger, killed many yakshas, although only one was the killer of your brother, you have offended Kuvera, the brother of Shiva. Now he's brother of Shiva or worshiper of Shiva? Yeah. Why does it say brother? We'll just have to check that out. What to do if we have offended somebody? My son, satisfy Kuvera immediately by offering respects, humble behavior, and kind words, so that the anger of great persons will not dishonor our family. That's what's next. That's coming attraction. Says he gives up his anger, and then Kuvera comes and they have a conversation. After this, considering that Kuvera was Lord Shiva's friend, his devotee, Dhruva asked from Manu the benediction of always and in all circumstances being a pure devotee of Lord Vishnu. The significance is that a devotee only asks for the benediction of serving the Lord. So, we're done, I think. Dhruva worships Manu. Manu and the sages depart, and next comes his discussion with Kuvera, and he goes back to Godhead, chapter 12. And here's another little nice illustration. There's the Big Dipper, and there's the Small Dipper, and there's where the pole star is. And even one of the charts gave it the distance between that lower part of the Big Dipper, you know, the cup part, that's X, and then the distance between that star and the pole star is 4X, somehow. I wish it could be so clear to see the sky like that. There's a stellarium. There's a little, I haven't taken the time to get into it. Somebody recommended, so I got it. It's on my hard drive. It shows you the configurations of the sky as if the sky is, you know, visible. And there's so many different things you can see, different times of the year and different times of the day and different times of the night and from different parts of the planet, and it does all kinds of things. It's meant to show astronomy using digital facility. If you're interested, let me know and I'll send you the link. You can. This is asking me to read something more, so that's it. I'm just going to, that's it. 16, 17. Next chapter. Thus, Dhruva Maharaj, at the end, left his kingdom. Now, this is probably for tomorrow, so I'm just going to go back here. We'll do this tomorrow. Journey Home, chapter 12. Whew. And let's see what the snowstorm is like when we try to go back. So any discussion? It's covered a lot of ground. It's important points. I probably need to restructure this for next time because it's a lot for one class.
So I'm at the last verse, 31. The advice given was, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization.
Yeah.
I wish all good fortune to you, for you. Please follow the instructions. And Prabhupada concludes his purport talking about the story of the snake and Narada. Narada Muni told the snake not to bite anybody, and when he got ill-treated by people. And Prabhupada concludes the purport saying, but in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, he should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants.
At least for the time being?
In order to drive away the miscreants. Like the advice given to the snake by Narada, that you don't need to bite, but you can lift your hood up so people will, you know, if somebody is really ill-treating you, that will chase them away. So Prabhupada concludes, in the common world where there is mischief made by others, he should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. So I was like, the one side, you know, you're supposed to really...
No, the difference is being controlled by anger and displaying anger, but not being controlled by it. Because anger controls the person that it's operating over. They can't control themselves. When anger is, you know, unleashed, they're controlled by it. So this is a display, but, you know, that can easily be withdrawn. As equally as it's displayed, it can be withdrawn.
Well, that one has to be very mature.
Yeah. And then it's not the other kind of anger. Not being controlled by anger. It's using something in Krishna's service. Like the Kshatriyas, they would fight during the day, and then in the evening, they're Hari Bol. Then fight during the next day, and controlled. And uncontrolled is very, very detrimental for everybody in the world. So uncontrolled people are very dangerous for themselves and everybody. And that's the world we live in.
Maharaj, the slide that had the different types of atheistic philosophies.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure I understood correctly, because I saw you were touching on how Daiva is one of these such atheistic philosophies. And is the reason why that's atheistic because they don't see Krishna behind
yes.
the Daiva?
Okay. Yes. Yes. That's it. Exactly. Okay. It's not, you know, because these other forces are forces. Time is a force.
Right.
But they say, that's it. That's it. There's no Krishna behind everything. It's just these forces. And they have a whole structure, a whole analysis, in many cases, with authority from scripture. This and this and this, and put it together as the package. It's all about karma. Do good karma. It's all about Daiva, so just follow your chart, because it's all destined anyways. And so then you're abdicating responsibility. You're disconnecting from God. It's all faded. Something else? Huh.
Maharaj, I was just wondering, when Dhruva Maharaj was touched by the conch, he was purified.
Yes.
He had got a spiritual body. And then he was sent back to...
How do you get a relapse?
Yeah.
That's your question.
Yeah. Because that, then what hope is there for us, right?
No. You should understand like this. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak. It's the bhajate mam ananyabhak is... And when there's a tsunami, the ocean covers the land. But when the tsunami subsides, it's back to, it only comes up to the place where the tide comes and goes. So there may be extreme circumstances where even a good person like Dhruva becomes overwhelmed momentarily. And then it comes back to. And such a person, according to Krishna's position and ours, should be, he's a saintly person. He just got overwhelmed by circumstance. And just by words, everything got corrected. Same as, for me, it's the same as when the sages said, Dhruva, you're going to be a denizen of Vishnu Loka. Dhruva. You're a hero. Dhruva, you're Narayana Astra. Oh, okay. He was bewildered by mystic display. No. There may be other circumstances where he wasn't bewildered, but so momentarily by circumstance, but it doesn't change who he is. Same here.
Thank you.
Online? She has...
Sorry. This question is from Sri Jiva.
Sri Jiva.
Yeah, two questions. Yeah. He says it's unrelated questions.
So okay.
First is, why does red color represent passion and blue represent ignorance?
It's really off topic. It's not exactly represents. Although you can say it represents, it stimulates. You know, so creation is the mode of passion, and that's, you know, red stimulates passion. And darkness, this bluish color, is ignorance. I don't know how else to answer that. There's probably some better way to answer it, but I don't know a better way.
The second question is, can ghosts go back to Godhead if they hear Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes. Recite Bhagavatam loudly.
And there's a question from Snehavalli Mataji. My question is in continuation from yesterday's question on Vedic cosmology. So the top of the lotus stem is Brahmaloka. Is Svetadvipa in the material world is out of the lotus stem because it's above Brahmaloka?
No. Svetadvipa is within the stem. But it's transcendentally situated just like the soul is situated within the body.
So the next question is from Kirti Prabhu. Is it right understanding that one killed by Lord Vishnu does not achieve liberation, but Lord Vishnu can liberate his devotees?
Yeah. But the means of liberation is bhakti. And the demons, they don't do bhakti. They get elevation, but not liberation, according to what our teachings say.
Sri Radhika Mataji's questions. The first one is, verse 23 read, "The absolute truth, transcendence, is never subject to the understanding of imperfect sensory endeavor, nor is he subject to direct experience." In Lord Brahma's prayers, he had provided the sequence of mercy leads to knowledge, leads to meditation, leads to realization. So isn't a Shuddha Bhakta able to experience the Lord?
Yes. Through spiritual senses, that this can't be experienced means through material senses. That's the meaning.
And her second question is, Lord Parasuram killed all the Kshatriyas on the earth 21 times.
Well, not all of them. Some of them escaped.
Due to the fault of one. Also, many persons were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, since they were the praja of the warring kings. So, is the difference between those instances and Dhruva's indiscriminate killing the fact that Dhruva was not acting under guidance?
Well, that's not the only factor. Who, under whose guidance was Parashuram acting? But, you know, and to say the kings that were killed, they didn't do anything. That's not true. The kings that were killed certainly did bad things. That's why he went after them. It wasn't indiscriminate. Whereas in the case of Dhruva, at least we're hearing, specific to the actions of one yaksha, so many. But it's not the same with the demoniac kings that Parashuram was after, or those that Krishna arranged for the killing of on the Kurukshetra battlefield. They were sinful, demoniac kings, and sons of demoniac kings, demoniac.
And Mataji's third question is, we hear that when a leader is at fault, all his subordinates must suffer the consequences of his actions. Was this yaksha who killed Uttama not in a position of leadership, therefore, to punish others associated with him was unwarranted?
Yes. That's it? Bhangsidhar, you got anything? We're done. You have something? Of course.
I'm sorry. My question regarding the younger topic, Maharaj, primarily. So, a lot of times, maybe my first question is what I need to do when I see somebody is getting angry with me or with somebody else, a third party. So if I'm in this situation, so how do I need to take it myself? Because I sometimes might lose why the other person is getting angry between third person, I mean, when it's not related. So it might be, thinking that, they should not be getting angry with the other person, because it's not good for either of them, but then there is something for me, it is coming there. So, that is the reason I am getting,
disturbed.
Disturbed, yeah. So what I need to?
First and foremost, whatever you may do or not do, first and foremost is don't lose your Krishna connection. Or, you know, in all circumstances, remember Krishna. Mana Krishna Navesheyat. Yena Tena Pakarena Mana Krishna Navesheyat. So circumstances may be there that will tell you something that I have control of is not what other people do. I may have concern, but I don't have any influence over that. But I do have influence or control. I potentially have control over my Krishna consciousness. So let me not deviate from my Krishna consciousness. Whatever's going on out there. And then what do you do when that happens depends on the circumstance, depends on the circumstance, the people, the time, the place, the degree, you know, and what your options are given, all of that. You may do something, you may not do something, you may say something, you may wait and say something later, you may call 911, you know, you have different options, depending on the particulars.
This question is from Amara Mataji. First question. What is the difference between tolerating and sweeping under the rug?
When you tolerate, it doesn't mean you do nothing. Tolerating means you control your emotions and then you make prudent choices about what to do about the circumstance that you're tolerating. The tolerating is internal, it's not external. Sweeping of the rug is just like turning out the light. You know, you go to sleep.
The second question is, as today's talk also kind of mentioned that one cannot ascertain the exact cause of a misery. So in this situation, how to remain tolerant rather than just sweeping under the rug? So the question is, when one cannot ascertain the exact cause of the misery in such a circumstance, how to remain tolerant?
Well, what other options do you have? You don't understand the cause. So if you're unable to take appropriate action because you don't know the cause, so what other, you know, intelligent or favorable option is there besides, but at least for the time being, you tolerate the circumstance. You don't get emotionally involved in something you don't really understand the cause of. And better, when you do understand the cause, you're not specifically emotionally invested, but you're, you know, acting as an instrument of Krishna. No, that doesn't mean when you're acting as a Krishna, instrument of Krishna, you're emotionless, but you're connecting that emotional state with service to Krishna, whatever is appropriate. No, it's this alignment principle coming again.
And the third question is, what are the characteristics of those who
are the characteristics?
Of those who are tolerating rather than pushing the thought away.
Rather than?
Pushing the thought away.
Pushing the thought away. Maybe one of the best things for you is you find a model of someone that you understand to be tolerant. And just observe them. So characteristics are, they have a spiritual conception of themselves, and their execution of their life duties very steady, very consistent, and they take action. They're action oriented, but the action they take is appropriate for the circumstance, not just like, you know, an emotional outburst. Like, this is what's happening with Dhruva. There's an emotional outburst and he's lost control. So the steadiness, from the bhakti perspective, there's steadiness in the execution of a life of devotion to Krishna. And guaranteed, when you see that, you're going to have this nice quality. That's what tolerance looks like when it's real. Okay, I think we're going to end. How are we going to end? We're going to end, and we're ending. There's a lot.